Testament lesson for today is found in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 2 to 9. It may also be found on page 45 in the New Testament section of the Pew Bible. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. This, too, is the word of the Lord.
You have an orange tab in your bulletin today, and so I'll ask you to hold on to that. Now, it does say 40 and under in the lower right-hand corner, but lest you be too alarmed, there will be a job for the 40 and overs as well. Today, we are exiting the season of Epiphany, and soon to be transitioning into the season of Lent as of Ash Wednesday. And I was reminded this past week of the meaningfulness of being a church that has a yearly rhythm based on the seasons of the church calendar. Now, I'm reminded because not all churches live this way. And I hope that you recognize that the rhythm of the Christian year helps us find a rhythm to our spiritual journeys. For me as a minister, I remember previous seasons of my Christian leadership life where on a Sunday morning, there seemed to be this underlying push or pull to cram every single Christian theme into one Sunday, every Sunday. I don't know if that's been a part of your experience, but we would talk, we would pray, and we'd mostly sing about how God was great, God is loving, God's my friend, God showed up in the person of Jesus, and then we'd sing about Jesus being great, and Jesus is loving, and Jesus is my friend, and Jesus went to the cross, Jesus died, but Jesus rose again, and Jesus is victorious, and we'd cram all this into the same Sunday. And I call this roller coaster Christianity because we'd just be highest of highs, but then we'd be in the lowest of lows, but no, the tomb's empty, and that's okay. And I felt like every Sunday we'd be bringing it in for this landing on roller coaster express Christianity. And then I found myself living into the Christian calendar, and it really changed my life. And so for us, as in other churches who live by this calendar, what happens is we start with Advent, late November, early December, and we welcome anew the Christ child amongst us. And then we move into the season of Christmas. We celebrate this Christ child who's born. And then we move into the season of Epiphany that we're in right now, a time of revelation, a time when we wait for God to make manifest what he might want to make manifest to us in the season of Epiphany. Light, revelation, waiting, watching. And then we move into the season of Lent, which is a darker, more somber season of reflection, where we take up things or we let go of things. And then we move into Holy Week. And then we end up at Easter. And yes, that's a big day for the Christian church. But we don't try to do all of Easter in one day. We live into this 50-day season of Easter, where we live in the light of the resurrection. And then the long season of ordinary time, or what we might also call the season after Pentecost. And the rhythm of this year, I hope you recognize, gives rhythm to our spiritual formation. The different seasons allow for us in different ways to receive or to anticipate, to wait, to ponder, to rest, to embrace, to celebrate, to grow. And all these things don't need to happen on the same Sunday or every single Sunday. And so today, we're exiting Epiphany. And we're taking a short break from the Gospel of Mark, and we're living into a First Testament or an Old Testament story, the story of Elijah and Elisha. And I want to give you a quick word of context, because for some of us, maybe just being plopped into the Elijah-Elisha story is hard in the midst of understanding the whole biblical story. So a quick word of context. Elijah and Elisha are prophets in the 9th century BCE. So this is thousands of years ago. They're called northern prophets in that they spoke for God, they spoke on behalf of God in the reign of the northern kings of Israel. And this is just after King Solomon's time. Israel is split to the north, Judah is split to the south. They both have kings. And the book of Kings can be maybe quickly summarized into this. God's people get tired of having God as their leader, and they say, "Give us kings." They ask for kings to rule over them, and for 500 years and for 40-plus kings, they get this mixture of good, bad, and downright evil and ugly kings. And all in the midst of this, God shows God's faithfulness to God's people. That's the big story. That in the midst of the mess, God shows himself faithful and sovereign in the midst of messed up, fickle people. So a story for then, but I hope you'll recognize that that might be a story for now as well. Elijah and Elisha are the prophetic focal points during this season of Kings. And through these two prophets, God shows that he's still Lord over all. Lord over all the nations. Lord over all the earth. Lord of Israel. And in today's text, we get to see how God transitions from one leader to another. Or in other words, how God turns a prophet. Whoa! Just trying to wake you up, people. Trying to wake you up. So we see this transition. And we're too in transition from the season of Epiphany into the season of Lent. And how does this story, how does living in the world of this text allow us to live in the world of our lives, day to day, week to week, in whatever our callings are? And so as we live in the world of this text today, I've pulled out four exclamations as we use this text to help us exit from Epiphany. Four exclamations, and I'm hoping one or two of these exclamations might resonate with you as you're in the midst of transitioning seasons. The first exclamation is this: it's the community. It's the community. I hope you hear us often saying here at First Baptist Church that we are journeying together. And one of the phrases that we use for Christian community is spiritual companionship. And I don't know if you've read the 5-year identity plan lately for our church. It's on our website. But our leadership talks about us being spiritual companions to one another. And we've even thrown out this wild goal that 3 years from now, could 80% of us on any given day say, "Yes, I can name one spiritual companion in my life. One person who companions with me, and we talk and we reflect and we interact with each other about spiritual things, about our journeys of faith and life together." And so it's the community. And maybe you can name that person right now. But if you can't, I hope you will be urged by being a part of this faith community that spiritual companionship and community matter. So what a rich picture of spiritual formation and companionship we see with Elijah and Elisha. We don't know how the word got out that Elijah was going to get swooped away, but we do know that Elijah and Elisha were together, moving from place to place, from Gilgal to Bethel to Jericho in this story. And it's even interesting to note that these two prophets are also in this larger community of prophets, or a company of prophets, as the text talks here. And I thought that was interesting because we often think of prophets as being these lone rangers. But here, Elijah and Elisha are together with a company of 40 or 50 prophets. It's the community. That's exclamation number one I want you to hold on to. The second exclamation, it's the tenacity. It's the tenacity, this fierce loyalty that's brought out by Elisha's three-time refrain. As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. How many people have you said that to in your life? I will not leave you. In the midst of our culture that does seem to be so fickle and let us off the hook from commitment and relationship, this might feel foreign. But I hope you might grasp onto the power of this tenacity. In the midst of all these voices, don't you know the Lord is going to take you, is going to take your master from you today? Elisha keeps on saying, yes, I know, shut up, be quiet, but I will not be moved. And maybe today you might take this challenge into your life. Maybe it's a calling, maybe it's a commitment, maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's even our community of faith. What does it mean to be tenacious in the midst of all the voices and pulls that make it easy for us to quit or pull away or become isolated as believers? Will we say, I know what I'm doing. I will not be moved. It's the community. It's the tenacity. Thirdly, the exclamation, it's the batonity. Okay, that doesn't work. It's the baton passing, the torch passing. Today's story gives us this great image of one person passing the baton on to another. And in the midst of Elisha's pesky persistence, Elijah stays close to his mentoree, for better or for worse. We read in verses 7 and 8 that in their final hours of being together, it will be just the two of them. This company of prophets is now moved back to be at a distance, and it's just the two of them who cross the Jordan and go over dry ground. And it's in this together space, just the two of them, perhaps with this looming mystery boding about, that Elijah asks Elisha a powerful question. And you have that on your colored tab. Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you? I want us to sit with that, even for 5 seconds. Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you? Have you ever been asked, or have you ever asked this question? Because in a community of faith, where we're called to be tenacious together, this ought to be a question that frames our conversations. Not in a consumeristic way, because that's easy, right? Well, what do you want me to do for you? Our response is usually, well, give me some money and my life will be better. I even found this working for our denomination 5 years ago. We'd go church to church doing these listening and partnering sessions, and we as a denomination say, well, churches, what do you want us to do for you? And So many of the churches said, well, if you only gave us some more money, we'd be able to do X, Y, or Z. But in a life and community of faith, it's not the dollar or the money questions we should be asking each other. How about this question? Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken away from you? Can we be a community of faith where the younger generation provokes the question from the older generation? And what would the younger generation's response be if we were asked this question? Or what would the older generation do if they were asked, if we were asked? I'm not sure where I belong. Elisha replies in verse 9, he says, let me inherit a double portion of your spirit. And this isn't a selfish response, because in this culture, in this time, this is what a son would rightfully inherit from a father. And it shows the intimacy of Elisha's and Elijah's relationship. And though Elijah seems careful in his response, the answer is not no, but one of promise. It will be yours. And so I want us just to think about, can we have some of this intergenerational dialogue where the older mentoring generation could, in practical and vital ways, be passing on what they need to pass on to the younger generation? I know I'm planting some seeds here. This won't happen instantly, but I'm hoping maybe this might be more of a question that fills our hearts and our imaginations and our conversation, even in this year. And so I'll talk more about that paper in a couple of minutes. But for now, a fourth exclamation. It's the dust. It's the dust that leads to new seasons. Verse 11, as they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. Elisha sees this, cries out, my father, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more, tears his garments in two. Elisha is literally left in the dust. The glory, the fire, the wind, they disappear. Elisha breaks down into tears, rips his garments as an act of mourning. This journey of sorrow and mourning, last week I talked about it as dancing and mourning, and I quoted Henry Nouwen. Here's one more quote from him. As we create a space to mourn our many losses, we free ourselves little by little from the grips of the evil one and come to discover in the midst of our grief that the same spirit that calls us to mourn stirs us to make the first movements of our dance with God. It's the dust that leads us into new seasons of ministry and service. And we continue to watch Elisha in this story. He takes Elijah's fire-singed cloak. He cries out, God, where is the Lord of Elijah? And much to his surprise, as he strikes the water with Elijah's cloak, the waters part. And there's this confirmed, yes, the Spirit is upon you, Elisha, presence happening. A new season has begun. And if you read on in this text, it's interesting that the first miracle that Elisha does is a healing miracle. And then he'll go on to do twice as many miracles as Elijah has done when you read these stories. So there we have it, the four exclamations to wrestle with as we exit the season of Epiphany and move into the season of Lent. It's the community. It's tenacity. It's baton passing. It's the dust. And in the midst of this somber and intense story, what might we be drawn to as God speaks to the drama of our lives? On this Transfiguration Sunday, how might an encounter with God in the midst of his living word change us, transform us, maybe even transfigure us, so that as we go down from the mountain, down from the encounter into the real world, God might give us something to carry into this season of Lent. And so maybe it's about community. Maybe it's about tenacity. Maybe it's about being called to pass on something or to ask a mentor what you need from them. Or maybe it's recognizing that out of the dusty and forsaken places, God shows up. I want to come back to this in our closing time. For the 40 and under crowd in the room, I want you to jot down your answer to that. And if the answer comes quickly, maybe you can just fold that and put it in the offering plate, and we'll compile those results and share them with you next week. If it comes slowly, then you can text it to me later or email me. If you were asked, 40 and unders, tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you? If the voices of this community were asking you that, what would your answer be? And then for us who are 41 and over, and there's a couple of us in the room here, I think the challenge for us is to ask someone that question. Maybe in the season of Lent, maybe this year, doesn't need to be tomorrow, but perhaps God will show you in this community of faith who he wants you to ask that question. And you can pull that person aside, or maybe it's a few people in your midst, and you can say, tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you? Not in a morbid, oh, I'm going to die, isn't this horrible kind of way, but in a, what is the gift? How can I live well in this season of my life and gift you with what you need to grow in this journey of faith, this journey of joy, this journey of mourning and dancing? Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you? Let's close with 1 minute of silence and allow God to start stirring what needs to be stirred about these themes of community, tenacity, baton passing, and dust. 1 minute to pray and to reflect and to listen, and then I'll close us in prayer. Our closing prayer is from the mystic and saint Teresa of Avila. Christ has no body now but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes through which Christ looks compassion into the world. Yours are the feet with which Christ walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which Christ blesses the world. Let nothing trouble you. Let nothing frighten you. All things are passing. God never changes. Patience obtains all things. He who possesses God lacks nothing. God alone suffices. Amen.